If a child is not initiated into the village, it will burn it down just to feel its warmth. African proverb. There is a growing concern amongst interested groups about the topic of gynocentrism, the tendency for any sexually dimorphic species to prioritize the well-being of the female of the species. This concern is not for all sexually dimorphic species. We aren't concerned about gynocentrism in monkeys or pigeons. Rather, the issue is with how gynocentrism is being instantiated within human civilization, and even more specifically, within Western civilization. Many of these stated concerns are centered on fairness, or more commonly, equality, and the growingly obvious difference treatment of men and women, despite the West's claimed adherence to these principles. Oftentimes, this concern is founded on an assumption that things were not always this way. Given the near-universal female-centric behavior found in sexually dimorphic species, as well as the simple math of population and pregnancy, this is an unlikely presupposition. Many of these claims follow a belief in an androcentric society or a former patriarchy that has since been dismantled, something largely based within which gender has been present in the history books. This, however, fails to assess history as a study of events rather than of individuals. It is not the man who performed the task that was important, but rather the task. We do not remember men like Winston Churchill because of who they were, witty chain-smoking drunks, but rather what they did, standing against tyranny. There have been any number of witty chain-smoking drunks. Most of us have never heard of them. If one wishes to keep with the assumption that things were not always this way, though, there does exist a realistic alternative to that of an androcentric society. Neocentrism, the tendency of every species to prioritize the well-being of the young. Rather than women's rights in the past being restricted because men wanted it that way, a belief in former neocentrism necessitates that women's rights were restricted for the well-being of their children, something ironically being supported by the children of single mothers and the plethora of statistics available about their likely prospects in the future. This perspective also lines up with the recent spate of articles claiming that millennials are likely to be the first generation that is worse off than its parents. The problem, unfortunately, with the perspective that neocentrism was the case in the past, is that in the event of death, children can be replaced if a society still has women. If a society has children but no women, it has unfortunately lost its capacity to have more children. Still, these perspectives are constrained by their assumption that gynocentrism has run awry. What if this is not the case? Many of the concerns raised in opposition of gynocentrism have little to do with women's well-being. Childless fathers, mangled marriages, wrongful convictions. These issues may be compounded by a society centered on women, but far more often the central theme is the other side of the gynocentric coin, that of male disposability. 9,246 men were murdered in the United States in 2013. 2,715 women were murdered in the same year. And yet, when it comes to reporting and to legal reforms, the violence perpetrated against women is the far more pressing issue. When it comes to speaking out against gynocentrism, most are not asking for the amount of coverage women get to decrease. They're seeking to see the coverage centered on men to be either equal to that of women or to line up with the actual occurrence rate. This seems like a common sense approach to deal with things as they actually are, but the amount of resistance such a simple proposition shows how much more is going on than it appears at face value. Few are proposing to take women's rights away, but they are slandered with that brush anyway. Most are demanding men garner additional government-granted entitlements to bring men in line with women. It isn't gynocentric to deny these entitlements to men, nor is it neocentric. Women and children do not suffer when men get adequate care. Quite the opposite, in fact. So why is gynocentrism being blamed? And why are requests for equality met with retaliation? To understand this, first we have to understand the nature of equality within the context of society. Equality has become a pursuit thanks to outrageous inequalities that have appeared growingly of late and that have persisted despite attempts to remedy the trend. Fundamentally, to have inequality, someone has to have more than someone else. The fundamental economic relationship between humans is a meeting of inequalities. One has more of X and wants Y. The other has more of Y and wants X, so they trade. Without the initial inequality, these two have no economic reason to interact. For much of history, this sort of inequality has been a necessary evil. The relationship between men and women appears to follow a similar pattern. Men have historically held extrinsic value, the material wealth and the byproduct of their labor, and women have traditionally had intrinsic value within their maternal capacity. The two trade these two things. Over the last half century, women have made great strides in their ability to provide extrinsic value to themselves as they have entered the labor force and begun to participate in public life. Men have seen no similar gains down the road of intrinsic value. They still have the same numbers of shoulders to cry on, the same numbers of ears to listen with. Many of the complaints men have listed are the consequence of their lack of intrinsic value. They are not seen as the primary caretakers of children and suffer in family courts because of it. Less is seen to be lost from their incarceration, and they suffer in criminal courts because of it. Unlike intrinsic value cannot be given, earned, or worked for. There is no road of intrinsic value. You have it or you don't. Men have no pregnancy or breastfeeding to offer. It is not what they are. 100 men and 100 women can have just as many children as 1 man and 100 women. No such luck for a society stuck with 100 men for every woman. To attempt to raise men's intrinsic value to that of women, as we have raised women's extrinsic value to that of men, is to dream the impossible dream. There can be no fight against male disposability, as it means ending sex and gender, not just as concepts, but as realities. Our biology demands male disposability and gynocentrism. Our attempts to equalize men and women have instead exasperated the differences, with women now holding both extrinsic and intrinsic value, and men often left lost and listless. And still claims are made that men simply have it better. This is often pointed out to be a logical fallacy, in particular, an apex fallacy. But just because a logical fallacy has been made does not necessarily mean the argument is untrue. The origin of men's supposedly pedestalized place in society often lies on a central crux, the freedom of man. Feminism, when presented with the rather evident differences between what men and women have done and do in society, came to the conclusion that this was the result of a grand conspiracy to limit women's freedom. Rather than contemplate that men may, by their very nature, be more free than women, a gender war was fermented, and differences between the genders ended up being denied. An entire ideology of equality has arisen to avoid the simple truth that men and women are different. But all this does is deny the very issues it is seeking to resolve. If men and women have differing levels of freedom, we need to know why before determining if they should. Outside of a grand conspiracy, it is rare to find an explanation for men's freedom and women's confinement to chattel. In the past, the most frequent reason cited was the differential in physical strength. Violence is power, and men were the arbiters of violence. The failing behind this line of reasoning lies in who the target of that violence was. Almost universally, men were both the perpetrators and the victims. And when we look at violence against women, things like rape have, to a similarly universal degree, been reviled throughout history within the context of the society with those rules. In nearly any era but the modern one, women and children were the first off the boats. Why would this be the case if men are the more important gender? When taking cities, from tribalism to modern warfare, the order is often given to kill the men and children, but keep the women alive, to be raped, unfortunately. But if women are the lesser gender, why not kill them along with the men and children? Not because women are lesser do these things happen, but because women's value is different. Despite the dearth of recorded explanations, gynocentrism itself offers an answer as to men's enhanced freedom. To be disposable is to be used and cast aside, uncared for, and most importantly, unconcerned with. If no one cares about you or what you do beyond how it impacts them, is that freedom? We complain about people dying needlessly, but what about the freedom to die? What about the freedom to fail? There are two active debates about suicide in the West. One about assisted suicide and whether it should be available, and one about an epidemic of men killing themselves. Men obviously do not need assistance and have retained the right to kill themselves regardless of the law. If disposability is the very source of men's freedom, feminists have been fighting for more than a century to make women disposable. The central issue of the matter to society is one of balancing freedom and value. The more value an individual has to the society they live in, the less free they inevitably will be. Women have always had a path to lose their value. Freedom is generally something you take. But as women have entered the workforce and lost their intrinsic value given to them by pregnancy, but gaining extrinsic value, they have done so by replacing men, lowering men's extrinsic value, and only furthering men's freedom from society and decreasing their value to society. No longer can a man trade his extrinsic value for a woman's intrinsic value. Now he has to convince her to trade both her intrinsic and extrinsic value for more extrinsic value, if he is one of the few men who has managed to find employment, or 20 minutes doing the horizontal mambo. We have taken an inequality where two people with different things can trade and turned it into one where one person has all of the goods. The necessary evil of inequality has been allowed to grow, unchecked and unrestrained by the careful compartmentalization set in place by our ancestors. Freedom and equality are the stated goals on all sides of the debate. To have men raise themselves up from their disposable position is to have men lose their freedom and lower them to the same fate as women, that of chattel and slave. If this is the case, the opposition to men's rights comes not from a desire to see men put down, but from a desire to see men's freedom realized for women. And the opposition to feminism is coming from a desire to see women retain their intrinsic value bestowed upon them by pregnancy. It is a conflict created from a desire to have what the other has, but cannot trade. It is a fight born of a desire for independence at any cost, to be free from dependence or codependence, to not need others. Unshackling married women from the home has removed the chain tethering men to society. This seems to be the underlying fear governing conversations of gynocentrism run amok. Men are now free from the social contract, free from their obligations and responsibilities to society. We hold no sway over them. They aren't Peter Pan, as many seem to hope. They are rather Mark Levine, Anders Breivik, and Elliot Rogers. Our failure to provide them with extrinsic value is a failure to initiate them into civilization. And we play a dangerous game when we hold them responsible for this failure. Calling someone a monster long enough, you can't be surprised when they act the part. Gynocentrism has not caused this, but it does keep us from speaking about it. The loss of their intrinsic value is a subject any man knows to never broach with a woman over 30, regardless of how true their statements may be. To even suggest that a woman under 30 who works is also destroying her intrinsic value is to invite a comparison to the Dark Ages. This is the challenge of gynocentrism in the West today. How to speak of the changes imposed by the ideology of equality without offending people's sensibilities. Gynocentrism in the West has become biologically enforced rules of politeness rather than rules of survival as it has been in the past. It is a sideshow that keeps people from speaking about core issues, a global troll demanding its toll before the bridge can be crossed. A pursuit to end gynocentrism is a pursuit to end gender, to stop men from being disposable and women being shunted to private life, yes, but also to stop men from being free to do as they will and women being valued for existing. This has been the pursuit of feminists, Marxists, communists, and postmodernists, and it appears that another ragtag group of activists is seeking to join their ranks in an effort to combat the ephemeral forces of nature that gynocentrism and disposability appear to be. The cultural anchor of equality that has spawned the reason for these activists' existence remains: equality before the law, equality of opportunity, equality of care. These remain moors, unchallenged, despite their rotting bellies and the obvious lies in their application. Gynocentrism, male disposability, human nature, these are not our opponents. They are our guides. Everyone has something to offer, though no two offer the same thing. This is the paradoxical inequality that creates equality. To pursue a world where everyone has the same privileges, the same knowledge, the same things to offer, is to pursue a world devoid of human interaction. We have two paths to equality before us: to fight ourselves, our biology, our realities, and seek equality directly, seeking to end gynocentrism or male disposability, the patriarchy, the bourgeoisie, or whomever the wrong thinker du jour is, or we can accept things. We can take the long road through personal betterment and be unbothered by the illusion that all men are created equal.